And welcome to the Steam Power Podcast. Chicka 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 chicka.
And we're live. Hello and welcome from beautiful downtown Southern Maryland. It's Steam Power Podcast, episode number 64, February 14th, 2015.
Number 60.
60. Happy Valentine's Day.
Yep.
Yes, that's right.
Yep, we're doing it a day early today because we are going up to visit my brother at UMBC tomorrow. So we're going to have a little post Valentine's Day out for our daughter, Dave and Buster's, and
yay, Dave and Buster's video game.
Go see SpongeBob Out of Water, whatever that movie is.
I can't wait.
And I always enjoy seeing Adam, so that'll be nice.
All right. Well, since it is Valentine's Day, we've got some Valentine's-y. We got an article.
We have one Valentine's-y one.
Love article. And some other good ones that we're going to start with this week. But I guess last week we promised folks that we would talk about the newest acquisition.
The 3D printer, yeah. Are you going to do the intro first?
That's okay. We're already too far in.
Oh.
Who cares?
It's time to get steamy.
There you go. Well, it is Valentine's Day. We should have said that.
And I'm Lisa.
We could start over from scratch. But you know what? I'm just not that motivated to do that right now. Let me see here.
You're Mike.
I'm Mike.
I'm Lisa.
You're Lisa. I'm Mike. somebody. Well, they have a CNC machine now. What?
What is CNC?
Computer numerically controlled. Basically, it's kind of like a predecessor to 3D printing. And so 3D printing, you take stuff that doesn't exist and you add stuff till you get what you want.
Mm-hmm.
A CNC, basically, you take like a wood router.
Oh, okay, so you kind of carve it out.
But with a computer that controls the router.
I gotcha.
Let me share the screen here real quick. Not that one, that one. That's the one I want to share. So we did end up getting the printer.
Yes, put that over my face because I'm sans makeup today. So
let's see if I can actually click on anything. So, yeah, it came in the mail. It was United States Postal Service.
Yes.
It got here really quick, even after I thought it was not going to get here on time. So I think PrinterBot bumped up my shipping.
It actually got here on my birthday, which was kind of ironic and odd, but
so
happy birthday to me. To me.
And the verdict is, it's awesome. I'm still tweaking the settings in. We're using Repetier, whatever you want to call it.
I think Repetier sounds good.
Repetier sounds awesome.
Yes.
So I'm tweaking those settings, but I've done a couple small prints so far.
But you are having a problem with it sticking to the bed.
So we got the non-heated bed. And
oh, there's a model with a heated bed?
Well, there's a... You can get
a
heated bed option. You can add it on.
Oh,
the back too.
I see.
So we're already, we're only printing the PLA plastic as opposed to ABS. Now ABS, the reason ABS stinks a little bit when it prints.
Okay. So we're in a kind of a small room that would be very good.
PLA is just fine for my needs. So what was I going to say? So yeah, so
you
the
printed
issue,
something.
I printed a few things. I printed for a project that I'm working on for Mouser. I'm using that to actually manufacture components of it, which is
that's pretty awesome.
It is so for certain things. It is so much nicer than having to cut it out with wood, especially small things that are intricate. So this one little and then right here. Let's see if I can zoom in without. So this little
that is a Magic the Gathering. Counter.
It's a life counter. Even though
Which
I skipped number five.
Something we haven't played in a while.
No. But I mean this was printed out and it's actually four parts.
Maybe we'll have to do that tonight.
We'll do that.
Yeah.
And the resolution is perfect for what I need. I mean, you can kind of make out the lines, but it is so hard to. it is really good quality. And for the price, I mean, there's no other printer that's even sub $1,000, let alone almost.
Oh, yeah, because how much are the, what are they, MakerBots?
The MakerBots are up to over, like, I think
they're a couple thousand, right?
You can get like a $1,700 one. But I think there are, when they first came out with theirs, I thought it was started at like 800, which is where this got. But see, MakerBot got bought out by a big name company. So they're not, they're no longer a part of.
They're no longer a little.
They got bought out by a guy that's been doing 3D printing for like 20, like, you know, I think one of the people that actually, I think it's one of the companies that actually held one of the original patents.
Oh, 3D. Okay.
So, I mean, it's good. In some ways, it's good. I think overall, you know, I think they are innovating faster than other people, like their scanners and their, they were the first to have the built-in camera into their system. Their software does look pretty nice. That said, it's at the expense of the price point.
Yeah. And so, for us and our needs, it's just not worth it.
It's not worth it.
No.
But,
I've been impressed with this little guy.
Yeah, it's done really good. I think, like, the issue I'm testing, because at our makerspace, we had a similar issue with the wooden MakerBot or PrinterBot. And one of the people there talked about putting a heat lamp kind of close to it. My problem, I don't have a heat lamp, so I use a little, you know, electric heater.
Electric heater, yeah.
And when I put it too close, the filament before it got into the hot end was already getting melted, so I had to adjust it back. The one thing I did change last night that seemed to make a huge difference. I was trying to print that little life counter out a couple times. After a while, I replaced the tape, didn't do anything. But then right before I print each time, I take a little bit of rubbing alcohol and clean it down. I don't know if I'm thinking is I cleaned off like dirt and residue.
Oils
that were preventing it. I think that's what happened. But I mean, literally, I tried to print this four times, had issues. Wiped it down with rubbing alcohol, and then all four parts came out perfect.
Wow. So, okay.
There's a little hint or tip.
Yeah.
If you're having issues, get a little space heater, kind of put it within a foot of the heated bed, give it like a minute or two to heat up. I think that helps. And I think cleaning your tape off with some rubbing alcohol.
Okay.
I wanted to follow on with another one too. So I also built something this week out of wood, and Lisa's like, what the heck was that?
Your table?
Lazy Susan. Because there's I found this piece of software called Skynect.
I thought it was Skynect, like Kinect.
It's scanning plus Kinect.
I see.
So if you have a Microsoft Kinect, or there's some other compatible, this software basically making 3D models a cinch. I mean, literally, I made it so I just sat here in the chair, had the Kinect on me, and I just spun in the chair, and it made a very decent 3D representation.
Wow. Okay.
Now, this is not a free one. They have a free version, which basically the constraining factor on the free version is that when you export, you can only have 500 faces. So if it scans something, like your face would be broken up to like hundreds, if not thousands, if not tens of thousands of polygons. If you go to export that to like print it, the free version limits you to only, it'll reduce that mesh it creates to 5,000 faces. So it's
just not as detailed. Resolution. Yeah.
For the paid version is like only $120 though. And then it's unlimited.
Okay.
I haven't dropped the money yet. But if I need to get to the point where I need
where to, you need to
reproduce something, then I think it's worth it. So anyway, with that, the way my little setup, and I'll take a picture and include it. I got a little thing I used to photograph my projects.
Little white box.
Little $4 Lazy Susan from
Target.
And then the Kinect one, a little platform. And I think what next I'm going to do is actually get a little, build a little motor project and have it automatically turn the turntable for me. It's cool. It works. All right. Anyway, do you have anything you want to talk about? Any, hobbyists. How's your projects coming along?
Good. I'm still knitting and.
Last time we talked, you started doing a little bracelet stuff.
Yeah, I've done a couple of them, but I haven't put them up on my Etsy page yet. So.
That's.
I know. I need.
You will
to get
never
on that.
Sell anything if you don't put it on the Etsy website. I'm just saying.
I need to get on that, but.
And that's what. What's the URL for Etsy.com?
Super chic, chic dollies, dollies.
I always got to plug that because, yes. You know.
I have some really cheap.
I'm the lead investor in that company. And
really cheap American Girl-ish hats on there.
12-inch so. Doll things.
18-inch. Yes.
Doll things.
They're 18-inch dolls.
Doesn't have to be American Girl. Maybe it is.
Our generation. What are the other ones? It's Journey Girls.
I love
there's
them.
different ones.
Just saying. We don't want to be American. We don't want to be American-centric. Even though we are Americans. Okay. Oh, one other thing. If you go to Target, I guess they're getting rid of these. I have to show this is my nerd thing.
Oh, okay.
This is $3. They're getting rid of their
the Magic the Gathering
Funko doll. So I got.
And they were 20. I was thinking.
$35. So if you're really into. And I hope the internet's not. Is the internet going out? Oh, if the internet goes out, I'm going to be crazy.
I don't think so.
All right. So with that, let's get. Shall we get everything is refreshing? I guess not. Want to get into the stories?
Sure.
Let's do this thing. Let me go over here. I wish there was like I just click a button on my keyboard, and it would automatically instead of me having to sit here and go, which is the one I want to share. All right. Got it. Goodbye. Got that. Goodbye, Skinect. All right. It's Valentine's Day, right?
Yes.
So why not have a story on the mathematics of love? We found this TED Talk literally like minutes before we were going to go live.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, being a sociologist and
yes.
people person, a psychologist and all that, do you believe that you can produce love and relationships.
Not to that. Simple mathematics, no.
Not.
I think there's more biology in love than there is mathematics. Because there's, I think, a definite genetic preference to the kind of people that we like. It's also, there's a sociology component to it because of how we're raised and the kind of people that we gravitate to because of that.
Okay.
So I think it's more than just simple mathematics.
So let's.
I think she's just using that as a plug.
Well,
to be honest.
Yeah. You know, it's a math. She's a math. Her name's Hannah Fry. She's a mathematician.
Yes.
You know, we all got.
And I'm not saying that there isn't a mathematic component to love. Of course there is. There's, I mean, let's be honest. There's a mathematic component to pretty much everything in this world.
So
if you break everything down, can't you find a mathematical component to pretty much everything?
Not my craziness. No, I agree that I think, yeah.
So, you know, it's not as simple as like 3 pi x/6, but.
Well, so let's see. Yeah, so, right. So her, let's just cut to the chase. Hers, I think it's an equation, not so much of what makes love happen. It's how do you find love? It's more like what her equation is. Basically, she's saying, proud plus provocative plus provocable equals love. In other words, let me just scroll down here.
But that's not math.
Be proud of yourself. Go after what you want.
Yes.
And speak up when someone's
bothering you. But see, the thing is, what we want is a product of our genetics and of our upbringing.
Right.
That's the issue with the whole mathematics of love thing for me, because this isn't math to me.
Right. This is a little bit.
She's just saying, I mean, it's like word plus word plus word equals word. That's not math.
Well, they're variables. the more proud you are.
Everything
of yourself,
is a variable.
May or may not be a good thing. Right. So here, let's instead of focusing on this particular thing here, let's take it to a more broad discussion. We all know there's dating websites like, you know, Match.com, OK,
yeah. eHarmony.
eHarmony. We know, God, that.
I've seen so many commercials on. And if you're single, eHarmony is having a free communication weekend. I've seen that commercial. Whoa.
How do you know about this?
I have seen that commercial so many times on TV. I can't even tell you.
So you would not deny, though, that in the I wouldn't say finding love, but in the matchmaking, right? Because you're right. Because
yes.
So basically, you start with, you know, the whole possible people in the world is what you know, of legal age, and of your orientation or whatever. So you have that's your initial size of
your preferred orientation.
Potential lovers, right? Or relationship people. Then from there, it's all about reducing that set. So do you, as a sociologist, do you think there is value in those kind of websites? Or is that just all a bunch of baloney? Is the math valid? Because we know that they're all based on, you fill out your profile, I fill out mine. There's got to be some whiz-bang math going on in the back, some formulas.
I think the value in those websites is how you interpret the data that they give you. That's the thing. I mean, you go on Match.com, and first of all, you're going to go for the people that have pictures.
Sure.
Because, you know, we want to see if we're attracted to somebody or not.
And make sure that they're not like a serial killer.
Yes. Although I don't know what stops anybody from just putting somebody else's picture up on the webpage.
But you go, if you agree to meet in a public
place. Yes, that's true. Time, that's true.
If they don't look anything like it, it's done. It's over. I'm out of here.
But I think it's how you interpret what they write about their self. And I mean, eHarmony is that one that matches. I think eHarmony of all of them is probably the more mathematical one because they're the one that claims to have all those variables that they match you on. Like they match you on this, that, the other. And
that also
I think Match.com is like one where you just read through people's profiles and pick who you like.
Well, I mean, I think the matching though is, well, not that I have any experience in this review, or at least recently of the last 12 years. you know, I'm assuming the crux is there is when I go in to answer those questions, I undoubtedly I will probably lie to myself and answer those questions in a way that I want to be seen or perceived.
Yes.
And not actually be. I think that's the biggest crux. When you fill out those answers, you say, you know, if I write like physical attributes, I'm going to say like, I'm a fitness guru. like, you know, I'm a six pack abs guy.
That's true. There's not too many people that are going to say like have extra pounds or whatever, you know,
even if right. Cause even if
because you're going to hope that somebody starts to like you for you and doesn't matter about, you know, it doesn't matter that
right.
You have 10 extra pounds than but you said you did or whatever.
Even in the more nuanced questions, things where that are more personality driven. I still think that if I were to do those again, knowing myself, I would answer them in a way that I would want to be seen versus
how you actually
really
are.
Am. Okay. And I think because of that, there's the biggest flaw to those is I'm going to get matched with someone that in my mind's eye, I'm a good compatibility with. But not who I really am compatible with.
Yes. I agree because I think a lot of times we perceive ourselves as different than we actually are too.
So.
Like I might think I'm one way, but in reality I act another.
Like I think I'm an outgoing extrovert, but reality is maybe I'm half and half introvert extrovert, or maybe I'm actually more introverted than I want to admit that I am. And therefore if I get matched up with someone who is very extroverted, I may actually turn out realizing how much I hate
because
myself.
Because you're not going to want to go to party after party and mingle. And yeah, I agree.
So anyway, not
so. I mean, there
happy
is
Valentine's Day. I love you, dear.
I love you too, dear. There is math involved. It's just not as cut and dry, I think, as she's trying to sell it.
Right. Yeah, and I think it is just. The way I read this is All you
the
nerds,
way I read this is she's trying to sell a book.
All you nerds, all you nerds out there, just get out there, be yourself.
Yes, that's the biggest thing I think is just be yourself, because you want somebody who loves you for you and not for who you think you are or who they think you are, or you know, you want somebody who loves you flaws and all.
All right, I agree. All right, so TED Talk, Dr.
But it is an interesting. It's an interesting lesson, you know, whether you're single or not.
Yep. And we'll post the links to both the original TED Talk and the Cliff Notes version. You really just got to get out there.
I preferred the Cliff Notes version because they were less about her selling herself and her book than they were just more cut and dry.
All right, let's move on. The first new antibiotic in 30 years discovered in major breakthrough.
Hoorah.
So I guess I don't understand medicine until I read this article. So we've had, obviously, there's been breakthroughs in medicine. There's been new medicines invented. There has not been an antibiotic, which is, I guess, based on naturally occurring microbes and bacteria.
Yes.
In over 30 years. That blew my mind. And apparently the biggest issue has been that, you know, they're in the soil. Like all these microbes are in bacteria in the soil. And scientists have for a long time thought, okay, yeah, those things that are in the soil would be great. They have potentially life-saving abilities. But the problem is when you take them out of the soil and take them into a lab environment, they die. Or they don't perform the way they do inside the soil in their natural surroundings.
And this is a really big deal. Because what happens with antibiotics is the more you take them, the more your body gets used to them.
And the things that are attacking you also get used to it.
Yes, yes. So they become less effective, and it gets to a point where they just don't work anymore. And unfortunately, I've had a bite out of that apple since I've suffered from Lyme's disease a couple of times now. And have had to be on really strong antibiotics because of that 2 or 3 times, even IV antibiotics. And your body gets used to them. And then when you get really sick and you need them for something else, they don't work as well.
And so the idea is, because Kevin Fabry will use the E word here, that microbes, bacteria evolve.
Yes.
And so just like anything else.
Just like any disease,
You get strains of these viruses that eventually become resistant.
Yes.
And they dominate because they're not exposed, because they can fight off, and therefore they become the super one. And then they evolve and change and get stronger, and then just it keeps repeating. So we throw
and there's been quite a few different things where they've had a problem with that. What was the one that they had a problem with a while back where you got the cut in your arm and it, I forget, what was that called?
Oh, yeah.
Not
a tuberculosis, not a meningitis, not a...
I am having speaking of Lyme disease, I get those brain farts where you just can't think of what it is, but it's where, like, if you get an infection in a cut and they can't heal it because it's resistant to the antibiotic.
I remember the stories. I just don't know. Yeah,
yes.
But so in this particular story, there's been a new antibiotic. They're calling it Tyxobactam, which has been found to fight off many common bacterial infections such as tuberculosis. I'm going to butcher these terms. Septicemia. That's like something. Is that pregnancy?
Yeah, it's like a blood thing. C. diff is like when you have diarrhea too much. And it's not a good thing, yeah.
So the real story, though, is like it leaves out what I think is what enabled this breakthrough, because they said the story is not so much they discovered a new bacteria or a new antibiotic. It's the method by which they are doing, how they're finding these new antibiotics that could revolutionize how we find antibiotics from here on out.
Wow.
And all it's reduced to is, it says, a team from Northeastern University in Boston, Massachusetts had discovered a way of using an electronic chip to grow the microbes in the soil and then isolate their antibiotic chemical compounds. Cool. So it doesn't, you know, I'm really interested because of the computer chip. What is this computer chip doing that allows the microbes to thrive in such a way in the soil that previously when they brought them into the lab, they were dying or not? It wasn't working. So I would, I've read the article and I can't find more detail. I'm assuming maybe it's,
maybe they don't want you to find. Yeah. I was going to say, maybe there's a reason why you can't find more detail on it.
But they're hoping to basically have the first, medicines out with this within the next 5 years.
Cool.
And then, like I said, it's not just that this particular, you know, super, I'll call it super penicillin, because penicillin was the first antibiotic, right? So the point is, not only have we found a new antibiotic that could fight off these particular diseases, we've actually found new ways of discovering and sustaining and harvesting antibiotics from microbes, which could usher in all kinds of new. The other thing is that they said the way they found it and the way they can manipulate this Tyxobactin is that they predict it would have at least a 30-year that it would take diseases almost 30 years before they could grow a resistance
to it. Wow.
So it gives us longer time in between superbugs.
To find new things, yeah. Yep.
So that's pretty cool.
That's really interesting, yeah.
All right, next story. It is cool. I think that is like for us, for you, really.
Hopefully. Yes, yes. Unfortunately, I've had unfair go-round with antibiotics, but c'est la vie.
C'est la vie. And like I'm going to tell you, just give it a couple more years.
There's a lot worse things in the world that can happen to you, and I'm very thankful and blessed that I'm where I am today.
All right. I wanted to bring this story up what I love about science is it's one of those fields where it's okay to be wrong. And in fact, sometimes it is good to be wrong. And the scientific community has the ability to be honest. And when they admit that they're wrong, they're wrong.
Okay.
Now this right here, it's
well,
not.
Well, some of them admit that they're wrong. Some of them still go on trying to prove that they're
overall,
not wrong.
Overall, I would say overall humanity since the dark ages to today has done better with science and being honest than most other professions. So anyway, so one of the fundamentals that we hold to right now since the 50s, 60s was, and Stephen Hawking was the idea that the universe is about 13.6 billion years old and that it came into existence by an event known as the Big Bang. That basically all matter and energy in the universe at one point was this infinitely dense single little point. Something occurred and it exploded outward. And ever since then, it has been expanding, and over time cooling down and coalescing into matter into different, you know, stars and the planets. Eventually life evolves. Boom. Here we are. The universe continues to expand. That is right now the generally agreed upon, theory of cosmology of how the universe came to being. Unfortunately, there's when you deal with things that are at really tiny, quantum mechanics. So things that are really small, like the size of an atom or things that travel at the speed of light, the physics in that world. And the physics of the world that we see, like the general relativity, like when I drop the apple, the apple falls. Right? Mm-hmm. There are sets of equations that govern both those worlds, right?
Yes.
And what happens when you try to bring them together to show that there's this one general unified theory of everything,
mm-hmm.
it breaks down into the point where you need to have things like black holes to explain things. There's other things called singularities, basically. In the math of trying to prove how the universe works, you get these infinities, like where the equation works out to infinity. But, you know, it's the mathematical proof of understanding. It's not like we haven't figured out a way to make basically experimentally figure out these things, but the mm-hmm. math on it. we get these infinities, these singularities in the equations, and we can't wrap our head around what
does that mean. I think infinity is such a cop out. To be quite honest, in my non-scientific mathematic background per se, infinity is just such a cop out to me.
But the thing is,
it's like that answer to everything. Oh, it's infinity. It's infinity. It's just.
Well, and that's here's the interesting thing. Like, you're right, and I think anytime we're unsure in science, right, we always ascribe it to the fudge factor, the X.
Exactly.
Right? And
that infinity is the fudge factor.
We've
done.
We've had, you know, back in the before we understood electromagnetics, we had the ether, and just there's this fluid that just filled the universe. Now that's interesting because the story talks about something similar here. But anyway, so the long story short is, a bunch of researchers, theoretical physicists and all that, they're out of a university in Egypt, I think, here, the Zawal City of Technology and Science and Technology in Egypt has, and they've had some contributors that are some of the people at the University of Lethbridge in Canada that have basically, they've come up with a new model of the universe. That gets away, that eliminates all those singularities, those infinities. And when you do the math that way, it appears the universe has always just been. It is an eternal thing. It did not come into existence. It will not go out of existence. It just always has been.
How does that work?
Like, I'm not a theoretical physicist. I'm just telling you what they're, I'm here to
I'm just saying I can't wrap my head around that.
It's something that is just, well, but see, now.
I guess that goes into sort of religion and God and things like that. You know, it's just always just been or.
Well, that's right. That's
you know, it is hard to wrap your head around.
Though. And prior to Stephen Hawking in the 60s, this was the theory that we believed in, that the universe was simply always there. It was always been and always will be. But we saw things in the data that led us to believe that the universe was expanding. We saw like the background radiation, the Doppler shift on of stars as they moved away from us. The frequency shift in their lights made us believe that everything is expanding and it's expanding at a constant rate. But we couldn't explain, well, how and why is it expanding? So we've gone to things called dark energy and dark matter. You know, not that it's physically dark. It's just it's matter that we haven't and energy we haven't actually been able to measure yet.
Mm-hmm.
This theory also eliminates that. You don't need dark matter, dark energy.
Okay.
Which is interesting because back in the 1920s, when we were still understanding electromagnetics, we used this thing called the ether. Which was just like this general, this is this fluid that we didn't really understand, but it just filled the universe and it just was. And that's how things, you know, some things we couldn't explain. That was it.
Yeah.
This thing though, it eliminates general, it does eliminate dark energy, dark matter. It doesn't eliminate, what I would call is like version 2.0 of ether. They're calling it basically graviton. So. Gravity, right?
You know,
so light is an electromagnetic force, and the particle that transmits electromagnetic energy is the photon, light, or radio waves. Similarly, we believe that there is a particle that imparts gravity between two objects with a particle called the graviton, which we've never figured out, never discovered. We haven't actually seen a graviton or found a graviton.
We just think that it
mathematically, when you write out the equations, you have to have this type of particle. Now, like I said, even though that their equation
so somebody made that up to solve an equation.
Correct. A lot of this is based, and then we go out and we try to find this scientifically or experimentally discover this stuff. So right, it starts with theoretical work. Someone theorizes or postulates that there must be this particle. We go out and we find it and we discover it, like the Higgs boson, which was one of the recently, we've always thought it should be there. We have only till now recently discovered the Higgs boson, which is a property or is a particle that imparts mass to matter.
In one of our stories.
In one of our stories, which we'll get to, which is cool.
Yep.
This new theory it relies on the theory that there's a quantum field filled with gravitons or potentially gravitons. And that is what gives us the illusion or the illusion that things are expanding, but reality is the universe is simply infinite and it just has always been. Okay. So the cool thing is, there's a new theory. It seems to be based on the math. Now it's a matter of now going out and proving it. And I'd be curious if Stephen Hawking, who again, you know, he fought when he was proposing his theory of relativity and his ideas with black holes. You know, he came up with, or was one of the leading thoughts behind the idea of a Big Bang.
Mm-hmm.
So since he is the foremost expert in this world, I'd be curious if he gets a chance to read this research and does it change his point of view, or
does he fight ways for his?
And it could be, there could be flaws in this people's research. And this is only one small group.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe there's something in there. When people go through the math, they find an issue. Maybe. Or it may change everything. Or it may just be a dud. But I think it's cool. I think the point is, I wanted to bring the story up because it shows the scientific process.
Okay.
Anyway. So talking Higgs boson.
Mm-hmm.
Three dudes with $10,000 and a bunch of old data almost found the Higgs boson first. So basically the story is, to break this one down, because it is a little bit of a dry story. Is that,
yes.
We've had, there's been a lot of research over the years, that's, you know, experiments that produce a crap ton of data. And the way you do the analysis on it determines, you know, the statistical relationship. Oh, I find, you know, long story short is that there was a group of guys, let's see here. Where are they from?
NYU?
I think it was NYU. Yeah. Basically, they were looking at some previous data from earlier, work, and they were very close to actually discovering the Higgs boson. And they basically, the Higgs boson was in the data. They just we didn't hit on the right mathematical and statistical analysis tools to know what we were seeing in the data.
Mm-hmm.
It's a long story short. And these guys, I think they were just a few months after or whatever, after the discovery at the LHC, out in CERN in Switzerland, these guys did it for a heck of a lot less money. But again, they were, I think that's true to a point, but they were using someone's data. So someone else had to generate all this data.
Yes.
A lot of time, a lot of money. But, you know.
So of course they did it for a lot less money.
Right. So it's kind of a true kind of story, but it's a good story. And that, the reason I like this one is that, you know, science and engineering, you don't need to have a crap ton of money or resources to do great things. You can do things building on the shoulders of giants. And, you know, I think it was Newton that said that. It's, if I have seen further than others, it is because I've stood on the shoulders of giants. So that's why I went to bring this up. All right. Ooh.
This is cool.
So military funded robots. So DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. I've literally just wrote an article for Mouser Electronics on robots. And this would have been an interesting tie into it.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, military-funded robots can learn, and specifically they're learning to cook in this particular research, by watching YouTube.
I think that's cool. I learn a lot of my knitting skills from YouTube, so.
Does that make you a robot? Are you just a robot?
Maybe I am.
So the interesting thing is there's been a lot of research, and I'm not convinced that we're really there yet, but there's, you know, for even a computer and a robot just to know, you know, if I held up any random object,
mm-hmm.
you know, as a baby, we teach them over time, as a human, we learn over time that, okay, this general shape is like, let's say a cup. Mm-hmm. I hold up a cup, I learn what a cup is. But now if I show you something that looks slightly different, like a different color, maybe it's a taller cup, a shorter cup, different handles, maybe one handles and two handles, you can still extrapolate, oh, that, it's not, doesn't look exactly like a cup, but it's still a cup, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, getting computers to do that is like friggin' hard.
Yeah.
Like really hard.
Because they're very particular.
Right, because at the end of the day, you know,
there's a certain talk
about fuzzy logic.
Yeah, there's data that says that if this equals this, then
exactly.
This,
it's still very much binary. It's true. It's false.
Yes.
You know, and I think with the difference is that we, you know, that's the question. And this is where you get into more philosophical, is, you know, what does it mean to be a human, blah, blah, blah. I think it's simply that our brains have this amazing ability to store a lot of stuff. We have really big hard drives. So we have like, and you can invent in our head, okay, if this is a cup and this is a cup, well, I can imagine there's a cup in the middle. And I build that model in my head. And when I see it in the real world, I know so basically what my point is, we've got really good memory, or we've got a lot of stored images. The other interesting thing about the story is, okay, so they're learning, they're not just learning to identify something, they're learning processes. So cooking, right? It's a open, okay, here's the milk, but now I got to know to open the milk and add just the right amount.
Mm-hmm.
And then I need to know to mix it. And that's what they're, they're doing that kind of level of research, that it's not just the identification. It's knowing what to do with this stuff. That blows my mind.
Yeah, I think that kind of blows my mind too. That they're able to do that.
And the fact they're using YouTube is not because YouTube is some fantastic artificial intelligence system. It's just that there's literally videos for just about
everything.
Everything.
Yes.
I got to go figure out if you were to watch YouTube continuously, I think it's something like that, you know, you would need like, I think even a couple of years ago, it was like you would need like X amount of millions of years.
Wow.
To watch everything on YouTube. So it's just a crap ton of stuff on there.
Yes.
And that's why I think they're using YouTube. And it's visual. It's in a, you know, a lot of step-by-step videos. So, but
I think that's really cool. That?
So the future could be, once we build a generic robot that's capable of learning anything, you just turn it over to YouTube and it learns everything.
It can come in my kitchen and cook in my house.
That's what I'm looking for. That's interesting, though. It is. It's neat.
It's very interesting. Yes, because what else can they do if they can learn to cook?
I mean, if they can, right. I mean,
the possibilities are infinite.
Well, it's infinite so far as if long as there's a video on YouTube about it.
Yes.
Anyway, I thought that was pretty cool.
Yes.
All right. Talking about defense and military and robots and cool things. Satnags.
Yes, I'll let you talk a lot
about this. So I'll talk about what it is, and then I showed this to you today, and you gave me some really good, like, well, what if? And so basically,
yeah, this story is,
I think they're Greek.
One of those, well, it's a good idea, but kind of stories for me.
Well, so there's tons of satellites there's just tons of satellites out in space right now. And there's even, you know, you can do even amateur satellites now, put things up on a balloon, let them, you know, swoop, you know, basically, you know, they're not quite in satellite orbit, but they're up in the high enough. So the point is there's a bunch of satellites. And even amateurs. I mean, there's amateur satellites and amateur radio people especially. We like to listen in. The space station broadcast. There's an amateur radio on the space station. The problem with things that are in orbit is because they're so high up and they're going so fast that you need to have ground stations that are basically aimed at in a very small cone. And only when the satellite passes through can you listen to that. Mm-hmm. You know, and so you have to kind of be lucky. Like if I wanted to go out here tonight and we knew the space station was passing overhead, we could listen to the space station. But if it wasn't our, you know, we're done. We couldn't. What Satnags is it's an open source hardware, software, 3D printed, everything in one solution, both software that you run on your computer. It's like a Facebook kind of social sharing kind of thing, where basically what they're saying is we have all these ground control stations, ground stations that receive the satellite,
mm-hmm.
but they're not networked together. And in an era with the internet, why not change that? Why not network all these different ground stations together?
And do you think there's a reason that they're not?
because we build them only to serve a specific purpose. It's because
we is only, it we resource build them, based?
It's resource constrained.
Okay.
We project driven. It's like I need to get this done, and I only care about me getting this one thing done. And it's
and geographic. There's no payoff in linking
especially
it
in
together.
The amateur world.
Okay.
Right? So these group, they're calling themselves SatNog, satellites. What does it stand for?
Satellite Network Open Ground Station.
Basically, they're going to provide the plans to do the mechanical construction. I mean, so far as being able to like give you plans to build your own radar dome, the antennas themselves, the hardware themselves. It looks like they're using BeagleBone, which is like a alternative, more powerful Raspberry Pi.
Okay.
They are doing 3D printing for parts. So they're providing all the parts that you can print out. So basically they're creating a ground control station that you could basically go download the plans for the hardware, the design files for the electronics, the software, and create your own ground control station. And as a part of it, it has a fee that connects back to the internet to their SatNog's website, where you create an account, you log in, and now your satellite ground control station gets linked into this central server. Mm-hmm. And now I could say, oh, I really want to listen to this International Space Station tonight, but unfortunately, it's passing over Australia. Well, I could look for someone who is in that neck of the woods, mm-hmm. and I could tie into their ground control station and listen and record and do analysis. And it does everything. I mean, it's not just collecting the signals, it's actually decoding the signals. So you can actually hear the useful, like, the data out of it. I think it's friggin' awesome. And I'll admit, I still don't, cause I just found it today and I need to go dig more. I think it's amazing.
No, I mean, don't get me wrong. I think it's cool. However, the cynical person in me says people are going to use this for bad things.
Well, and so
I think there's people in there. I mean, let's face it. There are hackers in this world that can break into encryptions that are going to listen to satellite transmissions that they shouldn't be listening to and could potentially use that against us.
Well, so, and I agree that, you know, all technology has pros and cons, right?
Yes.
It can be used for good. It can be used for evil.
I guess the question is, should something like that stop it from happening?
3D printing.
And, you know, I don't think that something like that should stop the project from happening. Don't get me wrong. But I do think that this just makes other people have to up their game so that, you know, make their encryptions tighter and things like that.
So let me, because I think your questions, people probably out there listening have the same question. So the idea is, first of all, this is reception only. So I'm only going to receive the signals. I'm not transmitting to a satellite.
Yes. I get that.
And their focus is only on the VHF and UHF bands, which the military has some use on those frequency bands. But they have gone to higher frequencies, and they're using really, really complicated.
So nobody can take this sort of technology and break into those bands that the military is using.
I think it absolutely could be bastardized. Yes, I think what it is now you've basically
because this opens the door in my mind.
This is the learning. So my could this. Could the SatNog itself be? No.
Yes.
But could
I agree with
learn
that.
Enough about how satellite communications work to be able
through
to go,
this and then
maybe.
That's my question with it.
I think it would be a cost thing that when you start getting the microwave and beyond wavelengths, you know, you're talking really high energies, you gotta be more safe. UHF, VHF is relatively low frequency. You're talking, you know, 100 meters.
Yeah, so, I mean, the vast majority of people are just going to use this as a learning tool. But, you know, all it takes is that one person out there to use it for wrong to really
I think we're okay.
You know,
we've already seen people 3D print.
But I mean, you can't protect against that. So
I mean, people, you know, they're 3D printing gun parts. They don't, I think
if we were going to protect against everything that could possibly be used for bad, we wouldn't have anything.
We wouldn't drive cars. Bows and arrows would be bad. Because,
that's true. You know, we wouldn't have anything.
I can use them to hunt, and I can also use them to shoot my enemy. Anyway, I'll leave it with that. I think I don't know how far along they are, but you know, this could be one of those projects that I really could get into.
I mean, I think they must be far enough along that they're putting their information out there on the internet. Obviously, because
to me, it's a combination of I like amateur radio, I like open source hardware.
Yeah, I can see you really getting into this
software. 3D printing.
This is right up your alley. So yes,
it could be cool. Anyway, so check them out. They're at satnogs.org, SATNOGS, Satellite Networked.
It's definitely up your alley, yes. Station.
All right.
It'll be the next ham radio thing.
Super nerds, unite! All right, so is there anything else for this week we want to talk about?
No, I think that's it.
This was an excellent episode.
Yeah, we had some good stories.
Probably one of the best, if not the best one we've ever had. So to everyone out there, happy Valentine's Day. Know that you are loved, even if you don't have that special someone.
Yes.
Go out there and join a community one way or the other. Open source, go to join a makerspace, join an open source project, and feel the love.
Mm-hmm.
You agree?
I agree.
All right. So I guess we'll be back. I got next week is another Gears of Resistance. This past week I talked about voltage. What is voltage? What is current? What is resistance? I think next week I'm going to continue on with that. I'm going to get to capacitance and inductance because I just couldn't get around to it. It was too much. Over an hour. And then from there, I'm going to start branching out and probably getting in some people to do some interviews and some other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And getting comfortable with where I want to go with it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask when you're going to start getting
Well, once the logo's on that and everything else just comes
out. Yeah. Okay.
All right. So with that, let me hide over here. For more steamy goodness, you can always head to steampoweredpodcast.com. There's links to everything else we do. You can go out from there. And other than that, I guess we will see everybody in 2 weeks. The 28th of February. Well, 29th. We go back to Sunday. So.
Yep.
Anyway, have a great week. And until next time, keep it quirky.
Stay quirky.
Stay quirky. Thank
keep
you.
It
That's
steamy.
Why you're here.
Yes.
Talk to you later. Happy
Bye. Day. Bye.